longest life can give. Such a man has in great measure come to understand the universe. He knows that honorable things do not depend on time for their growth, but any life must seem short to those who measure its length by pleasures which are empty, and for that reason unbounded. Refresh yourself with such thoughts as these, and meanwhile reserve some hours for our letters. There will come a time when we shall be united again and brought together. However short this time may be, we shall make it long by knowing how to employ it. For, as Posidonius says, a single day among the learned lasts longer than the longest life of the ignorant. Meanwhile, hold fast to this thought and grip it close. Yield not to adversity. Trust not to prosperity. Keep before your eyes the full scope of fortune's power, as if she would surely do whatever is in her power to do. That which has been long expected comes more gently. Farewell. Letter 79. On the Rewards of Scientific Discovery. I have been awaiting a letter from you, that you might inform me what new matter was revealed to you during your trip round Sicily, and especially that you might give me further information regarding Charybdis itself. I know very well that Scylla is a rock, and indeed a rock not dreaded by mariners, but with regard to Charybdis, I should like to have a full description, in order to see whether it agrees with the accounts in mythology. And, if you have by chance investigated it, for it is indeed worthy of your investigation, please enlighten me concerning the following. Is it lashed into a whirlpool by a wind from only one direction, or do all storms alike serve to disturb its depths? Is it true that objects snatched downwards by the whirlpool in that strait are carried for many miles underwater and then come to the surface on the beach near Taromenium? If you will write me a full account of these matters, I shall then have the boldness to ask you to perform another task. Also, to climb Etna at my special request. Certain naturalists have inferred that the mountain is wasting away and gradually settling, because sailors used to be able to see it from a greater distance. The reason for this may be not that the height of the mountain is decreasing, but because the flames have become dim, and the eruptions less strong and less copious, and because, for the same reason, the smoke also is less active by day. However, either of these two things is possible to believe, that on the one hand, the mountain is growing smaller, because it is consumed from day to day, and that, on the other hand, it remains the same in size, because the mountain is not devouring itself, but instead of this, the matter, which seethes forth, collects in some subterranean valley, and is fed by other material, finding in the mountain itself not the food which it requires, but simply a passageway out. There is a well-known place in Lycia, called by the inhabitants Hephaestion, where the ground is full of holes in many places, and is surrounded by a harmless fire, which does no injury to the plants that grow there. Hence the place is fertile and luxuriant with growth, because the flames do not scorch, but merely shine with a force that is mild and feeble. But let us postpone this discussion and look into the matter when you have given me a description just how far distant the snow lies from the crater. I mean, the snow which does not melt even in summer, so safe is it from the adjacent fire. But there is no ground for your charging this work to my account, for you were about to gratify your own craze for fine writing, without a commission from anyone at all. Nay, what am I to offer you not merely to describe Etna in your poem, and not to touch lightly upon a topic which is a matter of ritual for all poets? Ovid could not be prevented from using this theme, simply because Virgil had already fully covered it. Nor could either of these writers frighten off Cornelius Severus. Besides, the topic has served them all with happy results, and those who have gone before seem to me not to have forestalled all what could be said, but merely to have opened the way. It makes a great deal of difference whether you approach a subject that has been exhausted or one where the ground has merely been broken. In the latter case, the topic grows day by day, and what is already discovered does not hinder new discoveries. Besides, he who writes last has the best of the bargain. He finds already at hand words which, when marshaled in a different way, show a new face. And he is not pilfering them, as if they belonged to someone else, when he uses them, for they are common property. Now, if Etna does not make your mouth water, I am mistaken in you. You have, for some time, been desirous of writing something in the grand style and on the level of the older school, for your modesty does not allow you to set your hopes any higher. This quality of yours is so pronounced that, it seems to me, you are likely to curb the force of your natural ability, if there should be any danger of outdoing others, so greatly do you reverence the old masters. Wisdom has this advantage, among others, that no man can be outdone by another, except during the climb. But when you have arrived at the top, it is a draw. There is no room for further ascent,